From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. We are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. Yes, I say that every week, but today I am still on my mission, but we're going to turn the tables a little bit on you, I think in a good way. We're going to have Brian Verduzco. He is the producer of the podcast FITFO, which is Figure It The Heck Out. His podcast is about fatherhood and winning, and he interviews me for his show. We're going to play this for our show on today's episode, and I think you're going to get to learn a little bit about Mark Haney. Some of you don't want more Mark Haney. Those of you that do, well, my friends, today is your day. Brian's going to ask me about fatherhood. You're going to hear a little bit about what we're doing to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution. Really going to just get down to earth. Maybe even talk a little bit about fitness with my good friend Brian, because he's really into health and fitness. So stick around, my friends. Enjoy the FITFO podcast on the Mark Haney Show. Stick around.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
All right, well, here we are, episode number 8 of the FITFO podcast. I'm so fired up today. Got Mr. Mark Haney with me and doing it from the Mark Take here in Roseville, California. So I appreciate you hosting, having me here on my podcast. So thanks for joining today, Mark.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. We're doing your podcast in my office, which is so convenient for me. So thank you.
Well, you know, glad you ask somebody to be on and try to make it as convenient as possible.
This is awesome.
Nothing more than just having to walk a couple steps. So yeah. I thought I'd start the conversation just dating a little bit about how we met. I don't think you might remember some of this stuff. So
okay, yeah, I'm not remembering it.
I'll pop quiz you on this. But it was a Startup SAC event in Folsom at the, I think it was Granite Working, the co-working space.
Granite Co-working, yeah.
Yeah, and so it was an event where you were one of the panelists that were evaluating pitches from startup founders here in the Sacramento area. And, you know, I didn't know who you, I hadn't met you yet. So we're sitting side by side and we're listening to some of the pitches before you actually go up to do the evaluations. And then I introduce myself and you're like, hey, I'm Mark Haney. Like, how's it going? I'm like, wait, you're Mark? I've heard so much about you because, you know, being new to the area at that point. And, you know, I had started a business branch here of my company that I work for, Beacon Hill. And so, you know, I tried to get in the ecosystem. And everybody said, well, you got to know who Mark is. If you're going to get in the startup ecosystem somehow, you got to be around the sun, which everybody considered you. So it was cool to meet you there. And I just remember the aura, the energy that you had. And it was infectious from day one.
Wow,
so,
thank you.
Yeah, just thought
I
that
do was- remember that event and meeting you. Now that you say that, it's kind of coming back to me because that was years ago. What was that, 3 or 4 years ago?
2019.
Okay, 2019.
Yeah. So, but, you know, we have a little bit of history because your son went to Granite Bay and knows some of my best friends from college, and my wife went to Granite Bay as well. So it was just fun to kind of intertwine and finally make a connection. And then I sat on that couch right here, and you had told me when I was talking about a podcast, you're like, well, find your niche. Figure out what you want to do before you just jump into this whole podcasting thing. And here we are, a couple years later. I think I finally found it, a thing that I don't know too much about, parenting, but, you know, I think I'm all learning and on this episode of growth. So.
Well, I'm proud of you for following something that you really care about. I mean, that's what it's all about. If you don't have love for something you're doing, I mean, a lot of people quit their podcast after a year or two because it's like, it's not as fun because they don't love it. So you chose something that really means something to you. So it's going to be great. So I'm episode number 8. Hopefully this one doesn't suck too bad. So I'll try to not mess it up.
I have a pretty good feeling that won't be the case. But yeah, it's, you know, everybody says that. And most people quit after like 2 or 3. Like they do a podcast, they talk about what they want to talk about, and they stop. But for me, I'm like, man, there's just so many things to get better at. And then I'm learning along this way. And the cool people I'm getting to have connections with, it's been awesome. So looking forward to it. And the premise, I know I gave you a background, was about fatherhood, right? Figure it the father out is what we're calling it. So today I thought, well, if I want to learn a little bit more about entrepreneurship and how to develop that entrepreneurial mindset, even in my young girls from the start, who better to learn from than from you? Wow. So that'll be one of the main things we talk about, if you're good with that.
You bet.
But I'd love to start with a backstory, maybe an origin story of Spirits, if you don't mind telling the audience a little bit about you. I've come to know a little bit about you, but
origin story. You want the origin of entrepreneurship, or you don't want my life story? You want my entrepreneurial origin story?
Is that a good way?
So, newspaper route, video stores, security cameras, kind of gravitated to entrepreneurial stuff through those companies. Had a pretty good exit in 2010, a couple of 2009, 2010, 2011, right in there. And then started what I'm doing now, which is I'm on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And what does that mean? That means a podcast and sharing stories of winning on the Mark Haney Show, but it also means making investments into our local economy. I'm relentlessly local in my thinking and in my investing. So I own a number of companies, and I'm invested into, I think, about 75 companies now here in our region. Some through the majority through Haney Biz, my company. But recently in September, we founded something called the Growth Factory, which is a startup accelerator with an accompanying venture fund and a Backyard Advantage. And the Backyard Advantage is the leaders of Sacramento rallying around the most promising startups. And so within the Growth Factory, I think we've invested into like 28 companies since September. So we're going to do 100 over a four-year period.
100 different companies here in Sacramento.
Yes.
Man, that's incredible. And I remember when you first started to talk about this Backyard Advantage, I'm like, what does that mean? You know, and then you get all these local leaders. And when I was looking at the room, I'm like, man, these are some impressive profiles. Like, I definitely don't deserve to be in this, but I appreciate you inviting me to a couple of those meetings. And, you know, just seeing the Growth Factory, the recent event, GFX, mm-hmm. and what that really did. I mean, the event was awesome. And I think it's just incredible that you're really trying to inspire like local, you know, everybody can invest in companies all over the world, right? All over the country. And it's pretty predominant here to go to the Silicon Valley if you want to get into the tech world, but you're committed to doing it here.
There's nothing like putting your money where your town is, right? That's one of my mantras. And I love it because I get to live vicariously through the most ambitious people on the planet. The most ambitious people in our region are taking these risks, making these sacrifices, figuring out a way to change the world, figuring it the heck out, and they're doing it here in Sacramento, and I'm a part of that. As an old guy, I feel like at some level, it keeps me young.
Oh, I can only imagine, especially with the energy that was in that room and these companies that you're working with. So do you mind educating the audience a little bit on what is a startup accelerator? And then mm-hmm. you also mentioned a fund on top of that. Maybe just breaking it down for people that might be not as familiar.
You bet. Startup accelerator, think of a boot camp for entrepreneurs. So our program is 16 weeks of training as a group, okay. and getting to know one another and formulating more clarity around their business plan and their attack plan. And then our program lasts another 9 months of leadership. It's called founder to CEO, because a lot of startups come in and they haven't had as much leadership experience. So we try to develop the leader from within. And that program can be really helpful, especially for people that haven't dealt with venture capital and getting funding and how all of that works, or scaling something very rapidly. Because the companies we invest into are venture capital bound. Some of them have already got venture capital, but we put in a little bit of money from our fund, and then we apply the accelerator, the boot camp, and then we bring in our Backyard Advantage, these hundreds of people from Sacramento that get it. They get the power of entrepreneurship and they want to help. So we bring all of that together, which is kind of a unique type accelerator, but it's been effective so far.
Yeah.
And the venture fund, a venture fund is where, like, a pool of capital. So instead of it being all my money putting in, so it's my money and the other many of the other leaders and high profile entrepreneurs from around Sacramento have all thrown in some money, and we've pooled it, and we're making investments into these startups, financial investments that that help propel them to the, to get that next level of venture capital.
Is that a little bit untraditional, though, from like the normal venture fund? Because isn't it usually just like one or two LPs that are doing it versus, sounds like you got a ton.
Yeah, we have 95. We're going to cap it at 99. This is not a solicitation for more investors, but we'll probably get to 99 here in the next, you know, short period of time. And the SEC only, they cap us at 99. So we want to have quantity of quality investors versus just a small group, because each of those investors actually has the potential to add a lot of value to these companies, because these are highly successful people and they're helping start the startup founder to achieve their initial goals and get that early traction that is so difficult to have, so difficult to achieve. So really the our investors are, it is different because our investors are sort of rolling up their sleeves and being hands-on. That's one of the benefits of being hyper-local, is our investors are really empowered to come on in and help. Good. Where I'm investing into several funds that aren't, that don't operate that way. You just write your check and you know, hope you get a good return. So ours is a little more, you have the potential to control your own destiny. And it's impact investing because you're helping your hometown.
And how do you not feel good about that?
Yeah.
You know, you're investing in your neighbor that potentially could be that next, you know, unicorn company, who knows?
Yeah.
But do you feel as the person leading that? I know it's not just you, it's Rick and Monique, but like, is there extra pressure on you to make sure that some of these companies work? Because if you've got 95 investors that are like, all right, Mark, we're betting on you, but it's, if they were bet on you, you can control that a little bit.
I do feel that pressure. And when I went around asking for investment from my friends, right? So a lot of these guys are my friends, they, people that have been on my show, people that are in the entrepreneurs organization with me. So I don't want to let them down. But I said, I want you to invest the amount of money that makes you sleep better at night versus sleep worse at night. This is high risk kind of investing, potentially high reward.
Of course.
But look, I don't do this because you need this money back. Do this because you want to make an impact and consider it part of your high risk, I guess, allocation of your investing. So I feel better because I approached it that way.
Yeah.
I didn't promise the moon, but yeah, you bet I'm committed to getting those guys a financial return. And so that we, I don't lose sleep over it today. Each of our companies so far, knock on wood, is making pretty good progress. And so I'm confident that we're going to do okay at this stage. But yeah, I do feel a bit of pressure because it's not just my money anymore.
Yeah, I could only imagine. Yeah. And, you know, when you're going to all these individuals, I mean, these are, you know, highly successful folks that maybe they've never done this type of investing before. So not only are you asking for their money, but it might be a piece of their pie that they're just not familiar with.
You bet. Know? Yeah, it's a part of our strategy. One of my, I have my Niner seats over there. We were talking about the Niners earlier. Those Niner seats represent getting money off the sidelines. Those Niner seats are from Candlestick Park. Oh. So I got my old seats out of Candlestick Park and I've got them sitting in here, and I've actually taken them to events with me to say, look, we have to get some of this capital off the sidelines in Sacramento. There are people that don't even know what venture capital is. And that's a crying shame. We're this government cow town and we just aren't, I guess, is exposed to this asset class, but we have to change that. So a number of our investors have invested into this asset class, but the majority have not. And so this, you're right, there are, it's new, but there are so many high net worth individuals at Intel and these other major corporations that really can get into this asset class and they just, they don't know about it. So I think at some level, a big part of my job for in igniting the entrepreneurial revolution is getting that money off the sidelines and into the game.
Man, I didn't know those were from Candlestick. A little jealous about Candlestick. You had season tickets?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, so many good memories growing up and going to the Stick. I will not digress going down that route, but very cool. And I like how you're using it almost as like a beacon to say, here's, you know, what we're trying to do and how we're going to use this to hopefully get the people off the sidelines. So another thing that I thought would be interesting off of that topic is, you know, as far as you and entrepreneurship, you're not just looking for local entrepreneurs, but you're also intertwining it with like economic development.
Yes.
And that also is not very traditional. I feel like a lot of cities aren't used to that, where they're investing in their local entrepreneurs in the way that you've kind of gotten Roseville to buy into that.
Thank you for noticing that, because I would agree with you that it's not customary. It hasn't been done in Sacramento for sure. It has been done in other cities around the country, but not most, not many. And yeah. So it is a little bit cutting edge. And so part of our backyard advantage is getting everybody involved. So we're collaborative over, instead of competitive, with everybody, with the other venture firms in town. And we encourage the cities and counties not to compete with each other, because a rising tide raises all ships. We all know that. And so if your neighbor succeeds, it's good for the neighborhood. And so we're trying to spread that, I guess, philosophy throughout the region. Roseville gets it. Rockland gets it. El Dorado County gets it. We're talking to El Grove gets it. So we're not alone in our philosophy. We just have to help bring the understanding of, you know, less silos, and let's help the entire region, because we operate in Sacramento as a bigger region, right? Even though there's so many different municipalities together, you know, if Roseville does well, it actually does. It's good for Rockland.
Yeah. And the Roseville, is it Envision Roseville, or is that what the...
It's our Roseville Venture Lab. And we have something called Roseville Rising, which was one of our programs that we're running in that space. It's in downtown Roseville, 316 Vernon, right across from City Hall.
Oh, great location.
My old stomping grounds. I grew up in Roseville.
Oh, so is that where you learned kind of your entrepreneurial path, was on Vernon Street yourself?
I did. I had a paper out prior to that in Roseville. So that was, I was exposed a little bit. And we had these, as kids, we, you know, went door to door selling walnuts and stuff like that at Christmas time, so that people could do their baking. So, and mowing lawns. But my paper route was really my first thing that was like, oh man, this is my baby. And I ended up actually exiting that. I had an auction when I moved out of that neighborhood. I sold my paper route, and I was like, oh, wait, I can build a business that has value and then sell it? That was really interesting.
How old were you at that point?
Yeah, I was in fifth grade when I sold my paper route. I created an auction between a couple of seventh graders and got some good money for my paper route.
Wow, what a cool story.
It's a crazy story, but
that might have been your FITFO moment to get into entrepreneurship.
It might have been. But my parents had a small business in downtown Roseville, TV appliance store. And so I was exposed to that mentality from my parents. So in that way, I'm really lucky.
Mm. I think that that's what you're trying to do for everybody now, is expose them. Right? What your parents did for you, now you're trying to help do it for everybody in the region.
Yeah, and I think so. I think that's important, because if your only example of being a grown-up or being successful is an 8-to-5 job where you're playing for the paycheck, working for the weekend, that's success, hoping you retire at 55. If that's your mentality and that's what you view as success, that's fine. But there's other kinds of success out there that is, in my mind, more exciting.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I am curious to hear how you've done it personally from your own family, right? Obviously, your two kids are now their own type of entrepreneurs, and you've been able to spark that. Like, how did you do it in the home at such an early age? Any advice there?
As a father?
Yeah.
I think example just is really important. And I think I always encouraged my kids, whether this is right or wrong, I don't know, but I always encourage them to dream big, because it's okay to be great. It's okay to be different. It's okay to become a professional athlete. It's, you know, think bigger in your approach, and then let your actions gravitate toward greatness. My wife was the HR director for the city of Roseville. Hmm. You know, her dad and mom were great parents, but they were a little more mainstream in terms of their careers. My parents being more entrepreneurial, I was exposed to thinking a little bit different, thinking outside the box, not taking a little bit of risk. And I feel like I encourage my kids to do that. So they had an interesting balance between a working person and somebody who's chasing crazy dreams that are probably impossible for most, you know, most of the time.
Did they end up having their own paper routes or?
My son, they didn't have paper routes, but they had, they were both really committed to sports. And I think that we need a way to channel it. And I think entrepreneurship is great no matter what age you are. And so I think they did some entrepreneurial things, but my daughter was a high level gymnast, got a college scholarship in diving. And then, ultimately that drive led to her starting a real estate company, and she had an exit, got a 50, 60 agents, and then she ended up having a nice exit. And then now is rebuilding, her real estate empire, I guess, if you will. Wow. And then, so she had that, and my son was really driven as well. And then he went away to Arizona State. He was a little more like me, maybe a party guy, a little bit. And his fraternity, guy, I'm talking about my kid, his fraternity, Marx's fraternity, got kicked off of campus for fighting. And he ended up coming home from Arizona State and joining the Marine Corps. So he, you know, Marine Corps infantryman. And so that, I think that changed. He grew up, I think, and became, kind of decided what he wanted while he was in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, matured him a little bit, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So did you do anything at the early set to get them into sports? Because, you know, obviously we'll tie this back into entrepreneurship, but man, personally, I'm going through it. My daughter's three, right? So my oldest, so she's very new into it, but we signed up for soccer and we go to the first practice and I mean, complete fail, like sitting on the sideline, crying, not excited about it. And, you know, as a parent, you're like kind of embarrassed. Why are the other kids loving this? And, you know, I love sports. That's all I wanted to do as a kid. And I'm like, how did I not inspire that in my daughter? But, you know, I know she's young. So
she is young. And so I'm not an expert on in that realm. However, what I can experience share on what I did. And I think I probably scarred my children a little bit from my approach. I guess I could judge looking back that it must have been okay. Maybe that was their mother's balance, because I'm one of these people that obsesses on stuff. I can go all in hard. And when you're dealing with a three-year-old, that's pretty, you know, that's a little overboard. But what I did with my daughter specifically is we signed her up for gymnastics when she was, I think, two, three, and my wife worked, right? I'm an entrepreneur. My wife worked, and so she couldn't really leave. So I was the main person taking her to, you know, daddy-daughter gymnastics, jumping in with her and stuff. And she got really good, right? Because me, we're coming home and practicing and doing all this stuff. She became a great freaking gymnast. So, and, you know, it was intense. And she missed... Gymnastics is one of those sports that I don't really wish on most people, because to be good, right, you end up wanting to go to the Olympics. I took her to the Olympics when they were in Atlanta. I took my kids to the Olympics, took the whole family.
Oh, so cool.
Checked out, you know, what it was like to be an Olympian. So she had this drive of being an Olympian. But they only choose four, you know, a handful of people every 6 years to be in the Olympics. So it's kind of unrealistic to be thinking that your odds are very good at being an Olympian. And so it's brutal in that way, because you're required to be on a strict diet and work really hard and, you know, a lot of hours. It's like having a full-time job, if you will.
Right.
So is that good for a little kid? I don't know, looking back. She's driven now, and she doesn't hate me.
Hey, that's a big part of it, right? You guys have a great relationship now. Yeah. And
I was like a little bit like that with my son, too.
Yeah. That's the thing that I'm trying to figure out. It's like,
I don't know if that's right, though.
Well,
I encouraged it, though. It was their dream, and I just helped facilitate the programming, if you will. We took her to the best gymnastics places. My son got the best coaching, and, you know, he was on high level competitive teams in baseball. And so putting him in the right environment to chase their dream, I don't think that that's wrong.
No, I don't either. And I think that's kind of our
job.
But
if it's not their dream, then it doesn't work. So I was never the one to make it my dream. I was, in some way I did, but I only got excited about it because they were driven.
Yeah. And that's what you talked about, the obsession part, and you obsessing over what they were interested in.
Yes.
I think that's
not what I'm
critical.
Interested in, what they're interested in. It doesn't have to be sports, although I think sports is a great way to learn teamwork, and, you know, a lot of life's lessons can be learned on the athletic field. but it could be something else. It could be entrepreneurship as a little kid, but whatever they're into, it could be robots or something, whatever they're into. If you can get excited, if you can find where you get excited about that as well, and then I think you're a lot more likely to stick with it, just like the podcast. You got to be excited about it too.
Yeah, and I want to show her the excitement and show her the ups and downs of it, you know, because there's good times, but there's times where, you know, you get rejected, which is never fun, right? But I think it's good to teach them that too. And you probably got to teach them a lot about that as an entrepreneur and, you know, the ups and the downs that come with building businesses. And I think there's something about that too, from a parent perspective.
And, but I would say too, for your daughter though, is like, what is her, what is she like? Because typically people like what they're good at. So if she can go through a wide discovery on where her gifts lie, you know, what is she got aptitude for, that might be, you know, a good area to show encouragement.
Yeah, and that's what I just want to do. It's like double down on her strength, whatever she finds interesting.
Might not be soccer.
Yeah, might not be. And that's the thing. But it's like, I also want to teach her that if we commit to something, we do it.
Oh, 100%.
And so, no, like, quitting. That's, but she didn't choose that. I did. So like,
three, I mean, it's pretty tough as a 3-year-old,
right? That's, you know, that's the thing that I'm balancing currently. Yeah. But
I think at that point, it's just have fun. I mean, I think up to a certain age, it's just have fun.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, you know what, Dad? Or the other day, she was like, I want to be a dancer. I'm like, let's dance then. You know, like maybe that's, you know, not going to be a soccer field.
Well, you can use that. I can't dance. I wish I would have learned how to dance as a little kid, because now I'm like, I can't, I'm embarrassed. Can I go to a wedding? I got to sit. I'm a wallflower.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the most gifted in that regard either.
Take her, get her and dance. That way she'll never be alone, you know, at the party.
Yeah. So to circle back to the entrepreneurship aspect of parenting, though, because let's be honest, like building a business as an entrepreneur, I mean, building the most important business of all time is your family. Mm. And I think a lot of people make comparisons to like their company is their kid or their, you know, their baby, right? Yeah, yeah. And so I think for me, building that family is, you know, kind of the thing that we're focusing on most now. But any similarities that you draw from the two, like as you've gone through this a number of times now, like anything that being a dad has taught you in the business world or vice versa, what you've learned in the business world that's helped you as a father?
Interesting. I definitely feel like that coaching, I coach football and baseball, and doing that was really helpful to leading just the principles involved in playing sports and in coaching competitively. That stuff translates over to being the CEO of a company for sure. I also think that, I mean, I've learned a lot. I'm not going to claim that I was the best parent in the world, but one of the things, you know, my family has a lot of unity to it. Mm. We're building a family compound in Loomis called Haneyville. We're all going to live on the same property with my 8 grandkids. And it's like, we are really, really tight. And I think if you take, I had that sort of relationship as a kid with my family. My parents had that with their TV shop. I feel like we had that with the companies that we built growing up. And we have it now with our family. And as I tried to build out the growth factory, and anything that I endeavor I'm going to be doing that has more than one person in it, I love is a big piece of that. We, you know, in unity, and, you know, I would take a bullet for my kids, like most parents will, but, you know, will the kid take the bullet back for the sister and all that? Like, that unity doesn't happen by accident. I think you have to, as a parent or as a CEO, you have to foster that culture. And it comes through shared sacrifice and like leading by example in terms of shared sacrifice. And I think, and that starts at a really early age. So I think those kind of principles begin at a super early age as we're setting our core values, you know, as our children develop their core values in life. I think commitment and loyalty and to the family, into to America, and, you know, those values are what my kids were raised on, and that is so important in entrepreneurship and building businesses. A good example of that is my son. He joined the Marine Corps. He took a bullet for our country because that's the type of guy he is. He's the type of guy that he won't back down from a fight type guy. And you have to respect that. He's not picking fights, but like if someone's picking on somebody, like he's not the guy that you want, you know, you don't want to pick on his friends.
Well, and he's loyal too. I mean, yeah. I've met him a couple of times now and friends through friends, but like, that's real. Like what you instilled in him is like, that's, you feel that from day one.
Yeah. And I think, it's my wife instilled that as well. And I think then his sister did too. So it's like these values, they don't happen by accident. It's seen, it's noticed, it's the conversations you have when you're with your kids, when, or with your employees, when something like that occurs, like, whoa, that's to be celebrated when that you stood up for your buddy.
Yeah, that's a big one too, is to celebrate when they do something that they're standing up for their loved ones or their friends. And I was
curious, more important than talent.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's probably the thing that this eighth place trophy generation that we kind of grew up in is like, everybody's used to getting something just for being there and showing up. But it's like, that's the thing that I want to make sure I don't instill is you've got to, showing up is part of the equation. Don't get me wrong. But participation is not just something that we're going to reward. It's the effort that you give when you show up and do it with intent of anything that you put your name to.
Catch them doing something that ties back to the core value and celebrate that. My number one core value in life is commitment. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I respect people who can commit. I think I'm the type of person that keeps his commitments or does everything he can in order to keep his commitment. But what's happening, I think, today, and I don't think it was like that as much. So I'm 59, so I'm kind of growing up in like in the 70s type thing, 60s, 70s, graduated from high school in 81. That's my vintage. And helicopter parenting probably existed at some level, but I never really saw it. I never really paid that close of attention to that kind of thing. My parents, they would never got involved in any of my stuff with like talking to a coach or a teacher or anything like that. Or, you know, it's like they learn how to fight your own battle, you know, meathead, right? That was kind of the, maybe it's tough love, but I think we've gravitated toward a little bit of stepping in and not letting people fail. And just trying to protect them as much as we can. I think at some level it stops them from growing up and handling their own business. Because ultimately in life, we got to, you know, you become a man, you get to be able to handle your business. And so we're putting off that growing up piece to longer. And I think it has a lot to do with parents kind of stepping in and, you know, and I think at some level it creates a victim mentality, which is sad.
Yeah. And that's, it's almost hard to not do that now because you see everybody else doing it and stepping in and trying to be the one, the parent that's, you know, interjecting before they let their kid just kind of fall or stumble or go through those struggles. And it's like, no, like that's how they're going to learn. That's how we all learn.
And I think, and you know, people sitting down at the dinner table and having dinner together, or it could be in the car if you're one of those busy families, but having those deeper conversations about, you know, somebody, your son or daughter is frustrated with their coach or their teacher, or, you know, something happened and they're venting about it. And, you know, instead of going and solving it for them, well, what can we learn from a coach that doesn't think the way that you think about your talent level? Maybe you're not getting enough playing time or playing the position you want to play or what have you. It's like, it's not the coach's fault, right? You need to look in the mirror and, you know, teaching your child through the way you live, you got to look in the mirror when things aren't going your way, because pointing the finger at others, it's never helpful.
Oh, and self-awareness is a superpower. I think if you can teach that early and often, like your kids are going to be really set up for success in the long run. And I almost feel bad for my daughter because of this, but like growing up, I loved sports. I played sports all through high school.
What was your main sport?
I played football, basketball, baseball, 4 years of high school.
Yeah.
And I only started in one of them, my senior year. Like I was on the bench more often than I was on the field for a lot of it, but I just fucking loved to compete.
Yes.
I loved practice. I wanted to be there every single day. And
practice.
I know. It's weird.
I did too, actually. I'm that same guy.
And so
I didn't sit the bench. So,
You know, I was at a big school. Okay. No.
I was in a small school. So that was an enormous advantage.
No, I had no talent. Let's be honest.
I didn't
but
either.
What I was going to say is like, I also knew it. Like, I knew that I didn't deserve to be on that field yet because I hadn't beaten them. Doesn't mean I wasn't going to try every single day. But I didn't have this false illusion that like I should be starting at, you know, point guard. When it's like, you can't go to your left, man. Like, you got to work on that. Otherwise, you're still going to be here and play the defensive role that you're playing on, you know, any Friday night. So I think
it's good. Your parents, the fact that you are have that, that says something about your mom and dad, right?
Yeah. But yeah, and I never thought about it that way. Actually, it's a good way of putting it. So we all make mistakes as parents. Any that come to mind for you? Anything that you know I can learn from that maybe you did that you remember, a small, big, anything?
Okay, you want some admissions, huh? Let's see here.
I'm just trying to
let me
learn.
Think about what I could say that was not going to incriminate me. Let's see. I hit my kids. That's probably a bad idea. I didn't hit them a lot, but I can remember a couple times. I was the type of dad that got very intense when I thought it was needed, and that could be. It could seem threatening. I didn't hit them and I never hurt them. But that, you know, I don't know that that's the best thing to do with people is to physically intimidate them. Mm. I don't think it hasn't shown repercussions of, you know, in their life or anything like that. But I feel like they got toughened up with me, which may be a little bit on the extreme side. And I think having my daughter in at that high level of gymnastics, maybe I should have encouraged more variety. She played softball and soccer and did some things, but she didn't have the, you know, I'm kind of going on about that issue. She didn't have the typical, you know, life that, she, you know, a normal kid would have because, you know, she just, you know, she didn't have it. And because of her commitment to gymnastics. So that's kind of, and my son had the same thing, you know, trying to hit a baseball, you know, it takes a lot of practice. So anyway, so that, yes, I feel I would encourage people to do that, do something different than me, even though my kids love me for it. I don't know if that's best.
Well, I think that, you know, learning how to deal with the intensity for the different kids is also a skill that's a little bit tough. I mean, for me, I've got two girls, and I think it's been so good because it's lowered my intensity level overall, I think, especially from a management perspective as well.
And when I say, I kind of talk like I hit my kids. I think I spanked my daughter once in her life, but my son probably got it a small handful of times, and, you know, I didn't give him the light spanking, right? They felt it, and they really, really, you know, hurt emotionally by it, not physically. So anyway, I don't necessarily think that's the best idea.
Well, I definitely remember getting spanked. So
I did too.
I'm not against it.
I did, but
I don't
not
resent
a lot.
My parents for that. I can guarantee that much.
Okay, good. I don't resent my parents for it either, but I didn't get hit a lot, but like they didn't hold back when they hit us. So it was a belt, right? I never did the belt on my kids, but my dad would bring out the belt, right? It's like, oh no. If you just started cracking the belt, you know, I would be crying just hearing the belt.
But it's so funny, like, how far we've come since then. Like, just a couple of generations, and it went from a belt to now, like, you can't even say something to your kids sometimes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So it's interesting in that regard.
Yeah.
What about coaching? I'm curious because, you know, I think finding time to be a coach, like, I can't wait to coach my girls' teams, whatever it is that they want to do, sports, dance, anything, I'm going to try. But, pardon me. How'd you fit that in to your busy lifestyle?
Well,
that you have?
I was lucky, I guess, or I found success, some amount of success early enough on so that it timed out well. So I was able to like take some time off and commit to that by the, you know, work, say, three quarters time or 40 hours a week or whatever. Entrepreneurs work more than 40 hours a week typically. So you kind of, for me, we had had enough success. I think our business, I was partners with my brother at the time on a security camera company. And we had got up to about $35 million in sales, something like that. Wow. Enough where we were cash flowing decently. And so I was able to, you know, be a little less present at my office job and go really devote it to coaching. So I wouldn't trade that for the world. I really enjoyed that, but it's tough. It really is a trade-off because that probably kept the business from escalating. After that, after I quit coaching, our business blew up a lot bigger. And, I attribute that to me coming back in And my brother, same way, he coached a lot too, coming back in and really committing to a growth strategy versus, you know, sort of just living and working and, you know, making a little money.
Yeah, so. But the trade-off is so worth it, right? I mean, to be able to be there for your kids and to go through.
I would recommend that trade-off because you never get it back. And realistically, lifespans are increasing. We're probably going to live to be 100 these days, right? Unless we totally abuse ourselves, or you're probably going to live to be 100. So if you decide you want to coach for some window of time, maybe it's while your kids are growing up, you do it. Take 10 years and go coach. Find a way, suck it up, live a little bit more frugally during that period. And, you know, I think it's worth it. A lot of my close friends are people that I coached with, and the parents of the kids that I coached. And I wouldn't change that for the world.
How do you think about longevity? Just to switch gears.
That's my favorite subject right now.
Is it?
Because I'm 59, man. Well, you're jacked, at this point, by the way. At this point in life, you're like, I'm at the, I'm starting the fourth quarter, right, type thing. It's like, oh, man, I'm 59. Just do the math here. This is kind of, it's getting a little scary. So I do a few things that I think are really helpful for living longer. One, I'm around people that hopefully they love me, that I love. I really have a community and a family that I think it keeps you young to be around young people. I'm around young entrepreneurs. My family is super close and committed, and we do things together. I think without that, what do you have to live for, right? So for me, I've got something to live for my family. My occupation is the coolest job in the world, where I'm investing in startups. Come on. And I have co-founders that do all the work, and all I do is talk on a mic. I mean, it's the coolest job in the world. And I'm building this family compound called Haneyville, most magical place on earth outside Disneyland. I feel like I have something to live for, that I think maybe if other people don't have that, you know, I think that we can kind of deteriorate. And I think for me, it gives me reason to live. My granddaughter, I'm going to have another granddaughter born within the next week or so. That's probably right. Before this thing airs.
Congrats.
Like, I have to live for that. Shoot, I got to see her graduate from high school. I got to, you know, hopefully she grows up and gets married and has a great life. And, you know, or not get married and has a great life. I want to see that. You know, I want to see that movie play out. I'm really like want that. And so I do yoga. I get up early in the morning. I kind of do my little stretching meditation crap, and I do yoga and I do CrossFit. So my mornings are kind of dedicated till about 11 o'clock to less meetings and more fitness types of stuff. Yeah. That's important to me. And like, that's kind of, I also think stress is a killer. So those workouts, a hard workout where you're, you know, beat, that's a stress reliever, right? Because what are you going to be all stressed out about something when you just got your tail kicked at the gym at CrossFit? Heck no, man. You're like clear-minded, ready to take on the world.
It's the best therapy that there is out there.
Yeah.
So you do CrossFit,
I do CrossFit yoga. And yoga. I just discovered yoga a couple years ago, and I go to Eastwind Yoga. They've got an office in Roseville and Auburn. And the main guy is he's an entrepreneur, and he challenges you, and that like I kind of get off on that. So it's like, oh, I gotta make him proud. Hopefully he's not listening to this. I get off on improving, because especially when you first start something, I've been doing it a couple of years, you can make all kinds of improvement, right, at the beginning. So that's really transformed the way I think about my body. I mean, for an old man, I'm really have good flexibility and stuff like that compared to the average old dude. So I can, you know, and it's yoga, and it's all the things that I'm learning in and around that. So I highly recommend that, because I think flexibility and being able to get up off the ground when you're old, I mean, that's when you die, right? When you can't get up off the ground anymore, what are you going to do? You're going to die.
That's so what they talk about. It's like 80%
fall down and get up.
Break their hip. That's pretty much a death sentence.
Like, yeah. And I think that mobility that you have in all your joints, in the mobility, you know, the length and strength in your joints, I'm really into that. I'm watching. Have you heard of Ben Patrick?
No, I haven't actually.
He's the knees over toes guy. Oh, so he's yes, blowing up because that's what he's about. He's length and strength. And so I've been watching some of the stuff he does. I'm like, he's not about like how much you can bench press necessarily. How strong are you in those deeper ranges of motion the deeper ranges, build your strength in there, all those stabilization muscles, and that then you can have good form doing it. I see people at CrossFit all the time and they're doing overhead squats and they're not even going to full depth. And it's like, dude, you need to work on your mobility and go less weight. What are you doing?
Well,
I don't say that. I think it.
Yeah, but I feel it because I'm trying to do squats and I'll just try to do like a straight, back squat with something on, just a bar just to make sure I'm going, my vertical depth. And it's like, that's not as good as it used to be anymore. Yeah. So you need to pay attention to it. And
yeah. Well, I am proof. So that any elderly out there, I am proof. Like I was probably where you were too. I mean, I did CrossFit for the last 7 or 8 years and you tighten up and you hear about a lot of injuries. I had pretty good mobility because of CrossFit, but maybe lack of mobility because of CrossFit in some ways too, because you're building strength and, and stuff like that. But I'm living proof that you can get mobile. If you decide to put your mind to becoming more mobile, more agile, I'm living proof that it doesn't matter how old you are, you can improve in that area.
Oh, well, the challenge accepted.
So yeah. Anybody who's out there that's, over 40, you can learn how to do the splits. You can learn all that stuff. It's
you're
not
doing the
kill
splits?
You. I'm close. Not there yet. I'm just know that I'm going to get there. Uh-huh. Yeah.
See, that's the mindset, though, knowing that you're going to get there and not give it up until you do.
I just like chip away. The way I look at it, the guy came on the show, on my show the other day, and he said 1% every day, that's resonated with me. Like, hey, just make a little incremental improvement each day. So maybe I didn't improve my cardio today, but I did improve, a little bit of strength at the end of my range of motion on something. And so it helped my flexibility a little bit. So just make a little improvement every day. You can become a well-rounded human.
Yeah. I mean, just 1% every day, 365% over the course of a year. We talk about that a lot in our office. That's kind of one of our big mantras is just 1%. Just try to get a little bit better than you did the day before and you're going to love where you're at. But if you miss, don't miss twice because then you're really in the negative.
And most of the time people have a time, it's that back to that commitment thing. It's like, it's easy to, people don't stay committed to things as much as, they don't have the discipline to like stay with it. A lot of times people start and stop these workouts. And I feel like cutting out more stuff out of your life allows you to commit. So I'm a strong believer in cutting out all the, as much of the unnecessary stuff as you can. So you can commit. We overcommit out there. So I'm like all about commitment, but we overcommit on unimportant crap. So commit on the most important stuff.
Yeah, less is more.
Save your commitments, to just important stuff.
Yeah, to the stuff you can give your whole self to.
Yeah. My wife calls that laziness because I don't want to go do all this little commit to doing all this crap. But I look at it as like, look, it's self-preservation for me.
Yeah.
I'm committed to hopefully doing close to my best. Otherwise, I don't really want to do it.
Yeah, what's the point? If you're not going to give it everything you've got, then just go for it. So how did you change that? Because you mentioned you started recently. Like, is health something that you started to think of just because as you've gotten a little bit older? Or like,
I mean, I've got the book Counterclockwise sitting back there or somewhere. It's one of my, I used to have a clock that went the other way. I've been thinking that ever since selling my companies in 2010. So it's been on my mind. But when COVID hit, I think I kicked it up a tiny bit. Where I think a lot of people in COVID, they gained their COVID 15 pounds. To me, it's like, wait a minute, I do a lot of events and things like that. Those all got shut down. So a lot of things I do got shut down. All this social business building stuff. We have a co-working space. It's like, it's just me and Scott and Tammy. We're the only ones here for, a while in this big space. And what am I going to do with my time here? And, so I started reading books about fitness and listening to podcasts and stuff like that. And randomly, my CrossFit gym closed. Like, it closed because of COVID. And there was this yoga place open. I'll try yoga. And I'm hooked now.
So. Any books that you recommend that you really liked on the topic or any people you follow?
Well, Ben Greenfield, he's a guy. Have you heard that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, Ben Greenfield. I think he's got the book over there. I can't think of the name of it now. Boundless, I think it is. That's like a, Boundless is like a book. When I was a kid, they had like the medical books where you could look up any ailment you want. And like it teaches you, you know, tells you, oh, that sounds like it could be cancer or this or that. This is one of those type of books, but it's around, I'd say more of a holistic approach to how you might treat these things, these symptoms. And it's really cool. And it's more cutting edge and maybe some Eastern medicine sort of rationale to it. But it's not like, hey, go shoot a needle in your arm and put in, inject yourself with penicillin or something like that. It's a little bit of an anti-aging sort of approach. And he's, so I started listening to him. And so that gave me a lot of ideas. I haven't taken on all of them, but, look at that dude. That guy is ripped.
Oh, seriously. Yeah. And he'll do everything from the peptides.
Oh yeah. He's everything. He'll try it all. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff, you know, from fasting to, you know, cold plunges or cryo or, you know, stretching and yoga, like there's just so many different hacks now that you can do to try to make yourself better.
Yeah. And a lot of that that kind of ties back to the longevity thing. So there is, so I started reading books. That was one, Boundless. And then there's a guy named David Asprey got a book.
Bulletproof.
Yeah. So you're up on this game here. So I've read a lot of that type of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a number? I know he's got like 180 is what he wants to live to.
I laugh when I hear that because it seems almost impossible. Like I like impossible stuff. I'm just hoping that if I got to 100, like my mom had a brain aneurysm when she was in her mid 40s was basically not the same person after that. Died a couple, 3 years ago. But she was basically not, I'm in my 20s at that point, like mid 20s. So my mom was basically out early in life. My dad, a year or two later, around the same age guy, he got cancer and died. So I have this family belief that I have this thing that, oh God, I'm going to die early, right? And so I'm kind of surprised I'm still here, which is weird, which sounds kind of morbid. But so now, though, that I've had more time to digest what's possible, I'll be ecstatic if I make it to 100. I'll be happy. But I do want to be able to, in terms of fitness, my vision for that is I want to be able to throw batting practice to my great-grandkids when I'm 85, right? So I want to be able to, I don't want to be the grandpa that's out there in the rocking chair clapping when they do good stuff. No, I want to be active. Let's go. I'll hit you some grounders. I'll throw batting practice to you. I want to be that guy. And so with that, you do have to have mobility and hand-eye coordination and balance and stuff like that. You do that, you're going to fall down. You're going to get back up.
Right.
So that's important to me. Like that really matters to me that I'm not irrelevant, which is, probably my worst fear. It's like, oh, I'm not needed anymore.
Yeah. Well, man, those memories of grandfathers throwing baseball. It's to me the best one that I've got, but have a great grandfather throwing your batting practice.
I got to take it to one more level. I'm not taking it to the David Asprey level, 180 years old yet. I have abused my body at some level. I probably never get there. But from a fitness standpoint, I think that'll give me a shot at getting a few extra years.
I think you're going to get past 100. The way that you're taking care of yourself now.
Well, science is proving that they're coming up with new cures for cancer and so on. Some of the companies we're investing into in the growth factory are tackling some health challenges that, have been, major problems. So it's coming, right? It's entrepreneurship is the answer. Entrepreneurs are going to solve this, challenge of people dying at 80 years old because we're going to be able to fix, we're going to be able to cure cancer. We're going to be able to solve a lot of these challenges. It's just going to take a bit of time, but the innovations are coming. We got to get all this FDA approval and all this stuff all the time, but it's all coming.
Yeah. And I think I was reading an article the other day about the CEO, they used to want watches and yachts, but now it's They want to be jacked and they want to live for a long time, right? Yeah. They want to have the longevity. And, you know, Bezos is thinking about it. And
it's cool being successful. What do you, why would you want to quit?
Yeah, well, you want to do it for as long as they can. Yes. And I love that they're moving the needle on that stuff and paying attention to it. Yeah. Because for me, 130, like that's the number that I put in
130?
My mind. That's it, 130.
Wow, yeah. That's impressive. Well, you're younger. How old are you now?
34.
Yeah, so you at 34, I think that's very feasible.
Yeah.
Because I don't know the statistic, you probably do, but the ability, they're projecting that the lifespan of a human, it's going to be like Moore's Law, right? It keeps getting longer and longer. And I think it's because of these discoveries and because you're already a really fit person. So you'll get there.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, they're talking about now the kids that are born, like their life expectancy is going to be in the hundreds.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Like my daughter is expected to live to be 100 years old already. Yeah. You know, that's crazy. But for me, 30, I picked it because that's when I got married. And I told my wife, I'm like, we're going to be 100-year anniversary. And then I don't die if, so care sweet. If I die the day after that happens, June 16th of whatever year that is. But that's what I'm going to try to strive for.
And hopefully she outlives you, right?
Oh, she's going to. Yeah. There's no question about that. But I got to be the one to get there.
That's so awesome.
We'll see. Well, man, Mark, this has been awesome. I've really loved the conversation.
Thank you.
You know, I think sparking an entrepreneurial revolution is what you're priding yourself on, and you're doing it. I love seeing the backyard advantage. And for me, I'm trying to spark a fatherhood revolution. I think, you know, there's a lot of us dads out there that, you know, we want to step into this new role and create some better father energy than, you know, maybe what there's been a while for the last couple of years, and, you know, where it's gone, you know, getting that masculinity back into that household, being able to lead by example and, you know, show people how to, you know, be the right type of human beings that we want to see in the world. And it comes from learning from people like you. So
I admire what you're doing. I think it's very, very important to society. And I think so you've taken on a cause that you really care about, but you're also attacking a major opportunity for improvement in our society. So congratulations for doing that.
I appreciate it. So last question, final thought, any advice for the dads, the parents out there, some Mark Haney words of wisdom from parental advice, or maybe, you know, the best advice I got instilled in you?
Well, let me give myself some advice. This is something that I wish I would have been better at, is listen better. So I'm talking to myself on that. Is I think we need to be good listeners, because we want our children to be the best versions of what they want to be. That's what's going to make them happy. Ultimately, we want them to be happy. And so I think maybe we need to do a better job of listening to who they are, what makes them tick, and what they want out of life. And if there's one thing that I wish that I did better and did better before and did better now, it would be to become a world-class listener.
Oh, such vital advice. You know, it's hard to just sit back and listen sometimes, especially when you want to give your piece of advice. You want to tell them what you know because you've been through life and these experiences, and listen to dad because, you know, I've been there and you have no idea. But I will take that to heart, because listening is something that I definitely want to improve on myself. So thank you for sharing that. And Mark, thank you again. Really appreciate it. It's been a fun conversation.
Thank you, Brad.
All right. Well, let's go.
All right.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
You know, it's always fun giving a little bit of your backstory, and hopefully it helps you all tie together why I do what I do, who I am. And hopefully that means you can relate to me a little bit, because we all put our pants on one leg at a time. And today it was just a blast sharing my story with Brian on his show. And just a shout out to everybody out there that's fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship. Of course, those fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. You know, here at Haney Biz, the Growth Factory, and the Mark Haney Show, we are never above you, never below you, always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.